Hello everyone and welcome to the TateCast. This is a special little bonus edition. DraftKings has recently announced that they're going to be launching a fantasy tennis product. I have always had an affinity for the game. Obviously, I've bet it here and there a little bit, but when DraftKings announced this, I thought, yeah, you know, we should do a podcast on it because tennis is awesome, and you guys will probably want to play. So this is hopefully some helpful information from a guy who does gamble, who bets on a lot of tennis. You can follow him on Twitter at WhaleCapper. We are, of course, presented by the Pat Mayo Hour, the Pat Mayo Experience, rather. You can find him on iTunes, Google, Stitcher, anywhere that you want to find a podcast. You can find him, leave him a rating and review. Leave me a rating and review on iTunes if you would be so inclined. And now going to get into it with WhaleCapper. All right. Would like to welcome WhaleCapper to the show. You can find him on Twitter at @whale_Capper, a new sort of format on the show. You know, most of the time we're talking about fantasy, about, you know, football and stuff, but DraftKings today announced that they are releasing daily fantasy tennis, and I put the bat signal out on Twitter, and everyone told me I needed to come talk to you, like, immediately when I sent it, like, five people got in my DMs, and they said, okay, this is the guy you got to talk to if you want to talk about tennis handicapping.
Well, thanks for having me. It does seem like a super exciting opportunity to find more ways to build a bankroll. So I'm excited to talk about this.
So I am, I would say, probably in the top 15% of American knowledge in tennis. I watch all the slams. I watch the final, but I don't really watch the prelims unless, like, Wimbledon I will because it's on at a good time, U.S. Open because it's on at a good time. But I would assume most people who are going to be diving into this, you know, this may be their first time watching a qualifying round or, you know, a round of 32 match of tennis. So why don't you just kind of give an introduction to the sport outside of the finals and the introduction to handicapping those events?
Sure thing. So we're on the eve of Wimbledon getting started. Wimbledon is the third of four Grand Slams that we have every year. It starts on Monday. There are 128 women in the women's field and 128 men in the men's field. So there'll be 64 matches, split between Monday and Tuesday on both sides of the tournament. On the men's side, it's best of five tennis, which means you have to win three sets, to advance. On the women's side, it's best of three, to win, you know, if you're really new to this, to win a set.
Some people may be new to this.
Sure. So to win a set of tennis, you need to win six games by a margin of at least two. And if you get to 6-6 within the set, then it's decided by a tiebreak. The tiebreak is basically just high stakes, like you cannot make a mistake, you know, just point back and forth, swapping serves every 2 points. And then once that's decided, then the winner would win that set 7-6. The one exception, at least for Wimbledon, which is kind of cool, is that the ultimate set is not decided by tiebreak. So if it goes the distance and it's 2-2 heading into the fifth set in the men's side, you can have extraordinarily long matches.
Right.
Like there's been examples. You know, last year we saw Rafa Nadal go up against Jill Muller, I think the fifth set was like 11-9 or 13-11 or something awesome like that. And you go back a couple years, John Isner played a fifth set against a French guy, Nicolas Muhu, that went like 70-68. And you know, from a handicapping perspective, you have to account for all that stuff if you're betting the totals. And it's not obvious to me like how the length of matches would play into finding advantages in the daily fantasy side of things. But
I think the length of the matches would really just add the ace points, but also you bring
Bring
the risk in with the double fault and the break as well. So I kind of think it would actually, you know, if you have one of these 8-hour matches, I actually kind of think it would even out because the negatives are in there. It seems to me like DraftKings did do quite a lot of back testing. The only thing that seemed a little off is that the double fault is minus one for the women and the men, because the women double fault a significant amount of time compared to the men.
Yeah, that's an appropriate read. And you know, there are, you know, as far as putting together DraftKings lineups and you know, starting from scratch, if you're going to get into this and you're not super familiar with tennis, the number one thing to consider when rostering players, or you know, making handicapping bets for that matter, is the surface itself. Wimbledon is played on grass, and it's not a joke. It's literally, like, it's, if you haven't ever seen a broad, it's real grass. That tends to play into the strengths of the taller players and the players who have very, very powerful service game. You know, we are just coming off of a couple of weeks ago, the French Open, which is played on clay. And this is like a stark contrast to go from clay, where the surface is slower, where the ball, you know, the surface takes the speed off of the serve, and so powerful service can be mitigated by players who are particularly good defense and return and whatnot. That's not the case here at Wimbledon. If your serve is on, if you're firing missiles, you're going to be scoring plenty of aces. You know, the players that are particularly good on grass and that have a high ace percentage are players that are going to be particularly valuable in the fantasy market.
So when you go to evaluate a match, just any sort of random match, not even specific to Wimbledon or to Roland Garros or whatever, kind of just give me a couple of the factors that are immediately going into your evaluation of the prices.
Okay, so without a doubt, the surface and how well this player has performed on this surface in their lifetime matters a lot. That's step one. Step two. How has this player played against his opponent or her opponent in past head-to-head matchups? That gives you a great amount of insight into, you know, strengths and weaknesses in each other's games, and whether a specific player is capable of exploiting those, or if you know, if there may be some mental edge just in I can't beat this guy, you know, or like I always choke against this one, you know. That stuff definitely matters. So head-to-head is a huge factor. After that, I would say getting into current form is pretty important. Tennis players tend to have peaks and valleys over the course of a year. And, you know, some guys really pour their heart into the clay season, for instance, in Europe in the months of April, May, and June. And so then when grass season rolls around, they're on holiday, you know, and they may be just showing up for Wimbledon for a paycheck, because you know, if you are just in the first round here, you are going to take home, you know, a pretty comfortable paycheck. If you win a couple matches because you have an easy draw, you know, it goes up from there. And so current form is pretty important. Looking at how they've done over their last 5 or 10 matches is something that I go to next. And then lastly, you know, X factors, like, Wimbledon's not a great one for this, because presumably everyone who's there is going to try their hardest, because this is such a meaningful tournament.
Right.
But once you roll into some of the other smaller tournaments, motivations become a really important X factor. Is this in the player's home country? Is this a tournament that they got a draw that they think they can go make a particularly deep run, and therefore they're going to just leave it all out there? Whereas maybe their opponents are just there for a payday and they're ready to move on to the next stop. And so, you know, the at the very tail end of the handicap kind of comes into play those factors. And as far as how this will all play out in fantasy, my guess is that if you can identify, you know, and you know, I'm not a particularly strong daily fantasy player, but I'm guessing that there's a good amount of kind of second and third tier players who the casual tennis fan may recognize their names, who will be overvalued.
Well, Isner is actually probably the best example of that, because overall world ranking, he's not the greatest player, but people know him from the serving, and he always has about once every 3 years, he has a match that's on TV for like 11 hours, 'cause he just won't die.
Great point. Yeah. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they price him relative to a guy who, you know, who could win in straight sets, but maybe doesn't have as many aces in him. And, you know, Isner is an absolute, you know, you look at his handicap on the games total, and it's going to be at least 10 games higher than your average match. Because he plays tiebreaks consistently. Tiebreaks get you 13 games per set, as opposed to, you know, if you know, on grass, it's just generally, it's tougher to break serve, just beside the fact that that players who can serve well do well. It's difficult to break your opponent on grass because of the, if their first serve percentage is high, if their serves are going in, if they're in good form. It's pretty difficult to break, and so you just in general in on grass tennis you see more a higher percentage of tie breaks, longer games, longer sets, actually shorter games. You know, the, like 40 to nothing. You know, the,
yeah, 40 love.
You know, yeah, guys winning to love is pretty common. So you can kind of roll through games, but the sets themselves tend to go at least 10. Often 12, 13. And then, because tiebreaks are a little bit of a coin flip, you can sometimes see an uptick in the number of sets played as well. And so that kind of all goes into sort of handicapping totals and the game and set spreads and things like that. I'm sure that, I guess the best advice I could give anyone who's going to get into this playing daily fantasy is the tennis betting market is super, super mature. There are so many people who bet this across Europe. And I think it's the number two most bet sport in the world after soccer, depending on like if there's something big going on otherwise in a world event. There are a lot of people who do this for a living over in the EU. And so if you go to sites like Odds Portal and kind of look across the European books, you'll get a very good sense of the likelihood of a player winning, likelihood of a player winning in straight sets. I noticed the DraftKings scoring really gives you a pretty nice bonus if your player is winning in straight sets.
Yeah, if you just dominate, if you just smash and the match is over quite quickly, that's a huge benefit. So my observation on the scoring was the best player you can take is a live dog, and I don't know, did you ever play daily fantasy MMA?
I don't know. No, that's interesting though. I didn't know they had that.
The scoring is basically the same thing. Like in MMA, the best, and I never played it, but I had a friend who just had a model built for it and basically was like, look, if you just take the two favorites and the livest dog, it's honestly hard to lose. And that's kind of the way it is here, because the pricing, what I think is, this is kind of a dry run for the DraftKings sportsbook, because
of course
I don't know how much they're going to be manually adjusting the pricing. Like whoever does the NFL salaries at DraftKings clearly goes in and manually tweaks them, right? Like he's putting in adjustments not based on what an algorithm says, but on what a human says. And I kind of think that if they're trying to do 32, so 64 matches in one day, and the slate's not out yet, so we don't know. But if they're doing these big slates, I kind of think this is going to be their test of just seeing what a computer spits out, because that's a lot of what happens at a sports book, is they have these algorithmically generated lines. And so I do think that there will be some spots to attack based on that.
That makes a ton of sense. So a couple of tips then heading into Wimbledon. A guy like Andy Murray is a player that people will recognize by name. He has been out with an injury. He had a really bad hip injury he sustained in Wimbledon last year. He took a year off of tennis. He's just getting back into the sport, just kind of getting into his form. He's probably going to be overpriced unless they pin this directly to the betting market. I would expect you probably see, you know, people rostering Andy Murray it's the UK and he's great. He's a past champ.
Normally what they do with something that's related to the betting markets is it's pinned really close and then they add a tax for people that guys are going to take. That's like,
that makes sense.
It does. Like there's a 10% tax on Tiger Woods basically.
Ah, that makes sense. Okay. Well, you can potentially see attacks on a guy like Murray because he's a past champion, even though his form is pretty poor right now, and he's just coming off this injury layoff. You'll probably see attacks on a guy like Rafa Nadal because he just won a slam. Mm-hmm. But he, Rafa Nadal really, his game kind of depends on getting into rhythm on a given surface. He skipped the entire grass lead up to Wimbledon, so he's, you know, he really hasn't gotten himself into the type of form he needs to be competitive at this event. So you could probably see in the middle round some opportunity to track down a live dog against Rafa Nadal. And then a guy like Federer, who's the greatest of all time on grass by far, he's going to absolutely annihilate the guys he goes up against for the first three rounds, at least. The draw that they gave him for the first three rounds was so easy. You know, I think, and it's funny that you mentioned about live dogs, because like that's the entire approach I kind of go into handicapping tennis at in the first place.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's where the edge, because if you, I'm assuming a lot of people this probably have not even listened to or have followed tennis lines closely, but like a big favorite in tennis is like -1200. Like you're getting no return on your investment for betting those guys consistently, but you can kind of make your tournament with one good dog bet.
Yeah. Yeah. And in general, because people like to kind of throw together parlays, with a lot of the higher favorites. Mm-hmm. I think that does tilt things a bit, and create some value in the betting market, at least backing dogs. You just got to find the right place and the right way to do it. Cause you know, that, you're going to get a lot of opportunities where you, okay, well, this guy can win a couple sets, but he's not going to win the match, you know? And so, you know, those are always the ones I kind of look out for and try to pick off, especially in the early rounds. And just like a couple of statistics for you, if you're curious.
Yeah.
Wimbledon has about, 25, I think it's about, 25% of the matches in almost every single round are upsets. And
wow,
so out of
expected way less.
And it's crazy.
Do you know if those numbers are split between men and women's?
I've just been doing my research on this morning and only looking at the men's side of things. So I'm not sure if this carries over to women's or if there's a little bit fewer. My guess would be that the women's, at least the way that the tournament, at least the way the women's tour is stacked right now, the women's top of the women's field is stronger overall than the top of the men's field, I think. So you would maybe see fewer early round upsets on the women's side, and at least
I actually would have thought other way. Because I've been told that historically the favorites in the women's game are kind of overpriced and the dogs are underpriced.
I would believe that 100% if you look at historical statistics, just the current moment we're in. There's about 25 or 30 women who are all class above the rest of the women on tour right now, and they're all going to be banging round one and two. But on the men's side, the statistics are crazy consistent over the years. I've been looking back to about 2004, which is about as far back as my odds database goes, and you typically see 25% of the matches in every first, second, third round are upsets. So basically, there'll be seven underdog winners in round one or so. Or it's more like 14. I guess 14. There'll be 14 in round one and about seven in round two. And then typically there are, you can count on at least five relatively large underdog winners. So like odds of +200 or better. And then of those, you'll have one or two that'll be in the +400 range. So you can count on a couple upsets on the men's side. They're not, and in general, it's players who, who are in form playing against blue chip players who are just, something's wrong and no one really knows about it. And so that, if you dig around and you can kind of get a sense of like, hear tidbits from reporters or people who are in the know about players who everyone thinks will win easily, but in fact are like they have a nagging shoulder injury or hip injury or something like that. Like that's generally where you see the larger upsets come in Slam tennis.
It seems like minor injuries are kind of like a big thing for tennis betting and handicapping. Like that ends up being something that either it comes out before a match and it swings the odds, or it comes out after and everyone is pissed that they didn't know about it before they got their bet in.
Yeah, you're dead on the money. A guy with like bad blisters on his foot can, you know, it can completely ruin his chances. And it's just because, you know, at the top of the tour, you know, aside from the absolute studs, you know, there's razor thin margins. And so if something's nagging and, you know, you have a little bit of a, you know, your elbow's giving you trouble or you have blisters on your foot, you can be, you know, that's the angle that your opponent needs. And, you know, if your opponent, the reason we don't know about it is because if your opponent finds out, like you're having trouble moving up to the net, like they will exploit that all the live long day. Yeah. You're going to get run. Yep.
So is there ever a scenario where that information will get out, or maybe a line would move a lot right before a match that people could be paying attention to? Like, are line movements quite common in tennis?
It's line movements are very common. The market leader is a relatively small book in the UK called Marathon Bet. They are the first to hang a line on any tennis match. They have smaller limits when they open, and you can see lines move to the tune of 50 cents or more in like a couple of minutes.
Just because
pretty much at Marathon.
The bettors for tennis are just so with it that they kind of know what the line should be before it comes out.
For sure. And I've always kind of assumed that Marathon was sort of like this sacrificial book for all of the UK books. Like they'll hang a number, they'll get beat up on it. And then Pinnacle will swing in like 15 minutes later and they'll take the market adjusted number and put that up. You see that pretty commonly. But then, you know, once Pinnacle has a lineup, bettors, you know, get a chance to swing at it with the higher limit, the moves start to be a little bit more conservative. You're not seeing, you know, you see 20-30%, you know, 20-30 cents is pretty common, but more than that is a little bit rare. But when you do see a relatively significant line move, it's either because there's some injury news that's been uncovered, or, you know, and usually injury news is uncovered because like some player's friend will post a picture on Instagram of like a beat up foot, you know, or like some, you know, trainer will be like, oh yeah, I treated Djokovic's elbow after his training session yesterday, and it's like, yeah, no one knew he had an elbow. So, you know, that those kind of things always kind of trickle out on social media, and if you can get ahead of them, then you can lock in value usually. But it's, you have to be very attentive to that sort of thing, and it's part of the fun.
Yeah. So before we get out of here, let's just say you yourself, you're gonna go make a DraftKings lineup tomorrow. What are the things you're looking to see? What are the kind of steps you want to take before you click submit? Any final thoughts on specifically the DK product before we get out of here?
Yeah, so I guess I would I like the way that they have it set up, and that you can kind of do some good balancing between the favorites that that you think will win comfortably and some of the live dogs. I guess the things I would look at before I click. Finally, I would like to see what the ace percentage looks like for a player recently, right? Like, if you look over the last five matches, there's a great resource called tennisabstract.com that's totally free. This super outstanding gentleman
you have for people right now would be
this super outstanding gentleman, Jeff Sackman. Went to the trouble of going back years and years and years and compiling an awesome database of statistics, and he updates it regularly. You can go on there and click through to a player's recent results, and it'll just automatically, it'll pop up like last 52 weeks. These are all the matches. These are all the stats. I'd like to kind of look at like how is a player's first serve percentage going right now? Like, does he have confidence that his first serve is going in? Because on grass, that's what matters almost more than anything else. And just in terms of, are you a live dog? Like, is your first serve percentage high? And then, you know, specific matchups, then looking at head to head, you know, looking at head to head on that specific surface is maybe the most valuable thing. Okay. But that's not always available. And so, you know, maybe to get started, I would say you would probably have higher confidence in specific matches where that exists, you know, where you have some head-to-head history. And I would, at least in DraftKings space, there's going to be a ton of weird matches, for lack of a better word, weird matches in round one, where you have players who are wildly untested. Like guys who just qualified, this is their first ever slam match. No, never played in Wimbledon, let alone any, you know, never played in any slam, you know? And there's a couple players I'm looking at, and like they've only ever played at the challenger level. This is going to be a totally, you know, new experience for them. I would just cross those matches off entirely because you really never know. Like, is it, you know, is the moment going to be too big for these guys? Are they going to get absolutely run? Or does the fact that they qualified to get to this point, do they have some momentum and they're going to be dangerous? And so I would just kind of avoid those altogether and stick with the matches where you have, you know, two more, you know, relatively more established players playing each other and things like that, because you can probably tease out an advantage more effectively there than rather than just kind of throwing darts on some of the new guys.
All right. That was very informative. That was exactly what I was hoping for. The people on Twitter that sent me in your direction, they were absolutely right, man. That was great.
All right. Well, I appreciate you having me, and I look forward to following your content. It was great, great meeting you, and you know, best of luck.
Yeah. Do you want to pimp your content and your Twitter a little bit before we head out?
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, we're going to be posting plays every day on Twitter for the duration of this tournament. Doing a podcast here in an hour or so where we're going to break down the draw. You can find all of this posted at @whale_capper on Twitter. We do the deep dive podcast, and you can find that on iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud.
Boom. There we go. Everyone make sure to give him a follow at @whale_capper and get excited for some fantasy tennis. All right, so that's going to do it for today's show. As always, please remember rating and review on iTunes. Can't imagine how helpful that is. And let's just get excited for some DraftKings Fantasy Tennis. It's going to be awesome. Really looking forward to it. Hope you guys are able to interact with me a little bit about it, about your experience with it. And we'll see you back soon.